Welcome back, new you maniacs, to our spinner rack here at season 5 of the Marvel New Universe Comics Podcast, the voice of the new universe. We are your hosts,
Steven with Justice number 27, and
Andy, and I'm just gonna take a little nap. Fun fact, that's a line from the comic. New Universe was launched in 1986 as an imprint from Marvel Comics dedicated to a more grounded, less fantastic approach to comics, potentially more awesome. The original idea was the world outside your window and included real-time progress. The new universe changed a lot in 2 years, and at this point, we're almost into 1989 for the in-comic universe. The world of the comics does know about paranormals, and the U.S. government has started capturing and drafting them, sometimes sending them on suicide missions through the army and the CIA. Pittsburgh has been destroyed, forming the Pit, and creating new, sometimes twisted paranormals. And really, only a few issues remain for each surviving New Universe series, and they all seem to be heading towards war. It's a good spot for the echo effect. With our podcast, you can follow along with us each week as we go through each remaining comic, the order they hit the rack, or just check out individuals if you already have a favorite. I also have kickersinc.com, chock full of fun stuff, no doubt. And you can find us on X if it still exists at kickersinc.
The weekly updates on what books are coming out. We just passed the White Event Day, so of course that gets a shout out. July 22nd anniversary for all you new you maniacs out there. Anyway, this week we get back to Justice. Having had his life almost destroyed by a powerful paranormal, John Tenson dubbed himself Justice and gave himself a mission: to travel the land, find other paranormals, and judge whether or not they are using their powers properly. So
I think you should do that on your move.
it's travel the land like Kane in Kung Fu. The Marvel Age promo for this week's Justice number 27. Talk about trouble. Justice has more than his hands full this time. Not only must he stop the assassin Quill from killing his daughter, he also has to deal with his daughter's sudden manifestation of her paranormal powers. Written by Peter David, illustrated by Lee Weeks, Mando offset paper.
All right, Mando.
They were really pushing this Mando this month. I don't know.
And as we sort of talked about in the previous issues of this kind of month, the 27th, like there wasn't really a lot of extras at the end. So we'll do what we can for bonus discussion, but it might be a little light. We could talk and finally just dedicated 15 minutes to the Mando paper, maybe.
Mando.
I think there'll be some good stuff to talk about there because a lot of foreshadowing fun stuff we had picked up on in the previous comics is kind of paying off here in this one. So,
Yeah, we see some threads coming together big time here. So, the whole book is let's jump on into it. Justice number 27, cover dated January 1989, and we believe hit the stands at your local comic shop October 11th, 1988. The cover is Justice in his trench coat, lightning bolt uniform in a graveyard, and we see a tombstone behind him that says "Creep, crud, creeping." And behind the tombstone is the assassin Quill and Tenson's daughter Angela, although I think she's a blonde and not a redhead.
yeah, they always mess up the color on the covers.
It's definitely someone else's work. It's credited to Lee Weeks, the interior art. It's pretty good. Justice has a very like, I'm going to find you and kill you expression. That's good. And it is a there's a logo, dead end. Uh-oh.
Right, and this is like the rare time where the logo title for the comic is the same as like the interior title, which is always
Oh,
nice. It's
did not know that.
like a Purple Rain cover, though, right? He's wearing his purple outfit and it's raining.
There you go. It's a dark and stormy night. And jumping on in, we've got the credits. Still Peter David, writer. Lee Weeks is back as penciler. But I gotta give a shout out to the inker. We have a new appearance from Kim DeMolder. I had to go look him up, or her up. Kim had extensive credits throughout the 80s and into the 90s through for Marvel and DC. This was fairly early in their Marvel work, I want to say. They did a lot of what am I gonna I've totally blanked now on the what they did for Marvel.
Other comic books.
Yes, but what they I was amused to find that they had done quite a few issues later of Swamp Thing, which I really something about this story really reminded me of a Swamp Thing story.
Okay.
So anyway, the inside cover tells us, gives us the back story on the title, and the last paragraph sums up pretty tersely. Now Quill, a demented assassin, has kidnapped, naped Justice's daughter Angela, unaware that she has some paranormal powers of her own. Gets us right up to speed. We jump into the story and we just open with sort of small panels on a rather busy page that's sort of there's like an establishing shot of a business of a building. People are talking, and then we inside we see like a small sort of hole in the wall and a mouse crawling out of it. Mouse crawls over to something on the
Looks like a
ground.
hockey puck, but I'm assuming it was like some kind of rat trap or something.
That's kind of what I thought, but yeah, there's no like feature, so I was like, don't know. The dialogue over is, how long are we supposed to sit here? Well, what would you suggest, John? Poke around, stick our noses into things, waiting for Quill to set his trap so we can obediently enter. And the mouse gets zapped with Justice's sword, I guess.
Okay. Well, yeah, like David always really likes to have like the dialogue kind of match sort of what's going on screen, right? So the mouse is climbing and sniffing around, sticking its nose into things, not sitting on its tail, right?
Oh,
Mouse
right.
tail. And then that black thing must be like the trap, like a poison food block in there or something like that.
Okay, yeah, that's good parallelism, man.
I
The
didn't pick up on it the first time.
yeah, I was sorry, I sort of breezed on through, but you're right. That's good. We sort of pan up and see that it's Justice John Tenson sitting in a small room with Terence Updike and his assistant Chauncey. And Terence, I think, sort of chides him for zapping in his office. And Justice is saying he's practice keeping in practice for the human vermin who kidnapped my daughter. So Chauncey says something about no matter how many of the little beggars you kill, they just keep coming back at you. Justice reminds us that this is pointless. I'll level this city if I have to. Oh, not again.
Somebody give him some drugs.
But we get interrupted by a telephone call. Updike picks it up, and this is Updike. Yes, I know who you are. No cooperation until we know the girl's alive. You're dead. What? Oh, geez, sorry, John. I meant the line went dead. Too fast to trace. Anyway, you're supposed to go to a train station and meet him at midnight if you want Angela back. Don't worry, we'll have our people all over the place. You'll do nothing. I'm going alone, and if I see anyone who looks vaguely suspicious, I'll fry first and ask questions later. And unlike dead mice, I suspect your men won't be coming back quite as easily. And the part that kind of struck out to me that this is these last couple of panels where that hole that the mouse had crawled out of before, we see another mouse coming out of. Now we get into a splash page that is a real eye grabber. The next couple of pages are amazing. This is where I really say the inker did a heck of a job because it's completely colorless and it's just sort of black and white line art, but it is really nice cross-hatching here. Gives you, it's very atmospheric. And it's very clear, but it's like it's sort of reminders of like old medieval etching styles and things. I know I've seen some things like Bill Sienkiewicz could do stuff like this occasionally, but like I say, this is where I really am like blown over by this guy's technique.
It really stands out and looks cool.
I mean, Lee Weeks is doing his usual fine job, but even on the first couple of pages, I think the detail was a little better than we usually get from, the facial expressions and things. But here, it is just awesome looking stuff. So, what is it? It's this Angela, I guess, sort of running away from like a giant rat, and, over this, there's a justice narration. I am justice, and I pray wherever Angela is, she hasn't hit a title dead end. So this sort of vision of Angela fleeing from a giant rat continues on the next couple pages. She's falling into a graveyard, it looks like. She's running away from this thing. And she sees an open tomb, and the tombstone says, "Here lies Angela Tenson, born 1968, died 1988." It's a long time ago. The we
Very
see,
Christmas Carol.
yeah, we see some like zombie pop up behind the tombstone. I'm not sure if that's creeping cred or not, but we see this giant rat then pop up behind the zombie, and as Angela flees again, the rat crunches down and eats the zombie. It is chewing on it and then looks towards her and
Okay, so
is
like
starts
the
laughing.
first panel, page three, the rat's got these like big glowing like disc scary eyes kind of thing, kind of like Quill's glasses,
Oh,
right?
okay.
Also, Quill killed Creeping Crud, so like I wasn't sure because honestly, like the zombies almost got too much of a face, right? But I'm thinking that is Crud, and then like the rat kills the zombie. Like Quill killed Creeping Crud and kind of like spits him back out with no head. So I think there's definitely some parallels here. Again, that I'm only no recognizing now.
Yeah, it's following up on the mouse we'd seen in the first couple of pages. I kind of see there's some more, thematic re correspondence going on here. But we turn the page, and yeah, that is a shot of Quill, and he does kind of look like that last shot of the rat somewhere there. But another panel of Angela, she is bound and gagged. And she's on the bed in Quill's hotel room. Well, look who woke up. That was some dream you were having. Wonder what that was about. It was a guy named Nightmask, and he was saying that he could use me in the US Army. But anyway.
Again, it could be like Christmas Carol though, because there's like a bag of Fritos and like Milky Way wrapper and stuff. And wasn't that kind of like the like maybe I just ate some bad stuff and that's why I'm dreaming the dreaming you up ghost of Christmas past and that kind of stuff. So some old Chinese food. I just like all the background details.
Again, detail level higher than we got before. Wonder what it's about. Dreaming about that fellow whose head I blew off? Creeping Crud, I think you called him. Or maybe flashing on your own impending death. Am I right? Blink once for yes, twice for no. So he tells her, "My name's Quill. I'm in town to kill your father and see the Jefferson Memorial. He was the best, the quietest man in Congress, a man of few words." He says he will go ahead and remove her gag, but if she screams, he will cut her throat. And he calls back to Terrence and Justice, and that'll be him. Put him on the speaker. "This is Updike. There's someone who'd like to chat with Tenzin." "Daddy, help me. He's crazy. He smells awful and he looks at me like..." "He's a dead man, honey. Don't worry. I'll..." Quill interrupts. "Typical. More concerned about vengeance on me than saving your child. At least I have my priorities in order. Midnight, Tenzin." Click. Tenzin sort of looks at Updike. Then he walks out of the room. Chauncey says, "Should we cover the train station?" "Very discreetly, from a distance, a great distance. Remember how it rained the other day? It'll be zip next to the storm that's rolling in now."
I love that. It's like one, help, two, he's crazy, three, he smells bad.
Priorities. So we zip back to Angela and Quill. She's saying that, "Not the gag again. My whole mouth is numb. I'll be quiet." "Quiet as a little mousie, Quill looks at her for a second and is like, "All right, mousie, you remind me of a girl I know." "New." "Really? Tell me about it." He realizes she's trying to act friendly to get her to not kill him, but he's doesn't care. "I never really liked any girls. They always made me nervous, especially when I was young. And blah, blah, blah. I tuned girls out." Quill is an incel, as we would say now, apparently. He never had like interest in girls, but when he's in high school, he took this schoolmate to a dance. "She was one like you, except she was rather nasty and shorter and heavier. But neither of you liked me. I asked her since no one else would, and she went because no one else would take her. The dance was miserable. Afterwards, I pulled over to make out because that's what you're supposed to do. She attacked me." Scratched his face and then ran away. And we see all this in sort of a flashback. And as she's running, he starts the car and drives toward her and goes backwards, I guess. And so he's not sure he intended to run her over, but he does.
All
And
right.
then epiphany. So she's on the ground and he's looking at her and real and she's dead. He's like, "I watched the life leaving her eyes, and as I did it, finally, I felt it. Ecstasy." And a real interesting, like the previous panel is suddenly like color reversed, so it's all white on black instead of black on white, and no color. "So I ditched the body, left town, and never looked back. I found my passion and have spent years following it, as any good paid assassin would. In fact, this motel is right near the cemetery where the late Creeping Crud was laid to rest. I can't, being near such cemeteries is such a rush, Mousie, I can't tell you. Feeling you get. Do you get the same way if you kill, men?" "Of course not. I just kill men to pay the bills. Do you get the same way? What do you think I am? Some kind of sicko?"
yes.
Okay. Yes. Quill looks a lot like Legion, possibly Blowout from the draft.
Notably, too, he looks exactly the same in his flashback, other than he has like more square glasses. So
That's true. Yeah.
he looked like a
Yeah.
creepy 35-year-old man, even as an 18-year-old, I guess.
It's a very consistent self-image, yeah. It's a little cartoony, in fact. If I like it's like a face drawn like with silly putty to like twice its normal length. It's fine. But anyway, it's a we see outside, and the maid is knocking, and he yells at her to go away. We see the maid going to the hotel manager and complaining that he's This guy has been in his room and hasn't let her clean for 4 days. Maybe he is a drug pusher, something.
Maybe he hasn't showered in 4 days, and that's why he's so stinky.
The manager is nonplussed, but he says promises he'll have security check it out later. So he's a little abnormal. Who is these days? Who isn't? We flash over to Kleenex's hospital room. Justice is there in his uniform, and so is Miriam Morse, aka Playback. She has a slightly bouncier hairstyle now. I'm not quite sure if she's meant to look like younger and more attractive now, but she does. So.
Yeah, I still like Kleenex and like the Bugs Bunny traction or whatever, you know, with the cast elevated
Yeah.
the pulley and whatnot.
Yeah, it's got this one leg is up, and so the other two are just nosing around the room. Miriam is saying she is not a I'm not a psychic Tensen, or I'm a psychic Tensen, not a flashlight. I can't turn my power on and off. I pick up a mental wavelength that can rewind and play back, or I don't pick one up. In this instance, I don't. I wish I God I did, but I don't. I'm sorry. Kleenex is also trying to comfort him. Tenzin, we're all worried said about Angela, but she does have but one to go for that Quill doesn't know. She's a paranormal.
Is that like him all stuffed up?
Yeah. The other two in the room are paranormal, so he should be all sneezy. So as Justice says, true, but we don't know what she can do. What if her ability is to will her hair to change color? Rather useless in this situation.
Would explain
Well,
the cover, though.
it's good. It would be pretty popular now, especially if you could do all the blues and greens that you get.
Yeah.
I have anime hair. Huzzah! He continues, almost as useless as her father. Tell me, Victor, why do parents make promises we can't possibly keep? He's like, there was a time I haven't thought about it in years. Angela was about six, and we see this in flashback. It was an awful night, just like this one. It's rainy, stormy out. I was downstairs when Angela, who should have been asleep, started screaming, "Monsters, Daddy! Monsters in the closet! Make them go away, please!" "Shh, don't cry, baby. I'll protect you." "But there's no monsters in there." "I saw them. They're yucky." "All right, yucky closet monsters. You better be gone by three. One, two, ah!" Something piles out of her closet. We then see, actually, we've only seen one time before, Angela's mother,
Yeah.
Irene, is at the door, turning on the light. "Mommy, mommy, the monster's got daddy." What the heck?
Yeah.
And her mother, surveys the damage. "Is this your idea of cleaning up your room, young lady? Stuffing all your toys in the closet?" "The monsters must have put them in there." Surprisingly accurate dialogue for a 6-year-old, I gotta say.
It's not bad.
Justice is, yeah, he's on the ground covered in stuffies, I guess. He's back in the present day. "How am I supposed to keep her safe from monsters? I couldn't even protect her from toys. And now a monster has her, and I have to save her. And my track record so far hasn't been too hot. 4 hours to midnight." We cut back to the hotel. Quill is getting something out of the trunk of his car, which still has the body of the original chauffeur in it. And he's talking to the body, saying, "Don't worry, Ralph. Mousy will be keeping you company." Ominously. He takes a box out, which I originally thought was just a pizza that he had ordered.
He's carrying it like a pizza.
He goes in, undoes the gag on Angela, and she says, "My kitten, I forgot about Figaro in my handbag over in the corner. Please let me get him. He must be terrified." "Fine, but you have to do something for me." "Oh, I hope he's okay. Wake up. Please be okay." And the cat who we saw in the last issue and always seemed a little strange. is there, and he's got still got some like sparkling going on around him, and he has a strange sort of one-eyed open expression. There's my baby. There's my pretty Figaro. Was not left in the parking lot as I that was my guess, but okay.
No.
Although sitting in the handbag for I don't know days, and I'm not sure I would try that with a cat, but okay. So she's like, what do you want me to do? I want you to appreciate the gift I got you. Appreciate it a lot.
But I'm not a creep or anything.
Totally not a creep. It's like the tension just keeps getting higher and higher with each page we go past. She's like, you're kidding. You're not kidding. All right, let me go in the bathroom.
But
He
yeah, the
tells.
present was like a prom dress. Basically the exact same thing that the girl was wearing in the flashback.
You are right. Yeah. Oh, the same color, even. Yeah. She's like, forget it. Out here or in the morgue. It's your choice. Good. Good.
Not a creep or anything.
Tension right mounting. We see a very sketchy thing of a hotel detective coming towards in a panel, say thinking to himself that, you know, I why do I have to check out all the weirdos? Anyway, the in the room, Quill is saying, I know I should wait until after I've killed your father. I do so believe in priorities, and I shouldn't mix business with pleasure, but it's just the two of us. Don't tremble. It'll be good.
Things are getting a little rapey around here.
It's uncomfortably so. We see a knock. Security, anyone in the. Oh.
Your microphone cuts out every time you go too loud.
Wow, I thought I was cutting down on that. So there's a big help, and the detective knocks the door down, rushes inside.
This
Hold on, miss.
motel detective is pretty hardcore if you can just plow right through a door.
I think it says something about how crappy hotel doors are.
Right. The outside door, too. That should be the strong one.
Yeah, I think they were flimsier back then. I don't know. Maybe it's. It seems like the every time I go, it, like there's a new level of deadbolt bolts now. So, but anyway, the guy busts in the room, and Will has his gun in his hand though, so he shoots immediately. The guy doubles over, the detective, and Quill starts berating Angela. You promised you wouldn't scream. You're responsible for his death, Mousie, not me. You. She says, she's start continues yelling, no, help me. And the detective jumps at Quill. He gets another bullet through himself for it. But Quill's pretty surprised and is knocked off the bed onto the floor. The detective is still punching at him, even though he gets several more gunshots to him. Don't you know enough to die? Says Quill. Stop it, you stop living, you stupid. Several more shots. Finally, stubborn tub of lard, wasn't he, Mousie? Mousie? Gah, get off me, you blob. She's getting away. The detective's body is now just lying on top of Quill, but Angela has taken this opportunity to bolt for the door. And we see her out in the rain. Gotta get away, far away. Get to Dad. Get to Dad. Quill will kill anybody else. Dad'll protect me. He'll know what to do. She falls down an embankment. Ah, let's get to the highway. Somebody stop. There's a crazy man after me. He wants to kill me. She jumps onto the highway, and she's lucky to not be run down immediately. So nice figure work in the drawing here. The next page, she is running along the highway. There's thunder and lightning now. She's like, oh, lights, someone's slowing down. We're saved, Figaro. He's speeding up. And she sees behind the wheel is, of course, Quill. There's a
Look
cutout
at the
there.
cat, and the cat still has like the winning facial expressions whenever Figaro is on panel. So, well,
Yeah, she's still holding him and she's running and she flies off over a guardrail and sort of into the woods, rolls down a little hillside there, and Figaro kind of goes flying, but he's okay, I guess. She's gets up a little. Daddy, where are you? The car got to get away. My ankle twisted it. Boy, she is like every horror movie
right. The
protagonist here.
tumble like perfectly mirrors from the dream sequence too.
Oh, right.
Like
Nice.
coming up to the gate.
That's it. Her power is to see the future. Much better than that Lindsay Fowlman overtime BS, too.
Right.
Anyway, she's at a gate and she says, "Let me in, help me. He's trying to kill me. Is anybody there?" She can see the headlights are coming back, so she squeezes in between the bars and she goes in. "Made it. I made it. I'm safe." Quill's car just crashes right through the gate. Pretty big panel shot there. Pretty
Yeah.
rash.
He's gotten a lot of mileage out of that big limo that he stole from the chauffeur he killed.
Yeah. He gets out of the car. "Angie, you've got me all wrong. Now, where are you?" Yeah. He's got the gun in his hand, of course. "Daddy, help me." Bullet goes whizzing by her there. We flash over to Daddy. Justice is waiting at the Falls. Where is it? East Falls Church Metro stop, which is in Arlington, Virginia, as it turns out. One of the West Side Metro lines with the, I believe, the gray and the orange line both go through that.
Ooh.
If you're in suburban Washington, D.C., trying to get around, recommend it highly.
Or if it's a rainy night, you can recreate that panel.
Probably.
I do love this part coming up where like Justice is kind of starts narrating some of it. But basically he's missing out. Like he's not there. He's
Yeah, this
sad
is the
dad in the rain waiting for the pickup.
that's well put. Yeah, it's really weird that, to have our main character be kind of sidelined in this, but it also works surprisingly well. So, yeah, he is just back at the subway or the metro stop that he'd been told to meet Quill at. And we don't know how far that way that was, but they had said before that the graveyard was right next to the hotel where she was being held. So Angela gets up and says, "I know this place." And yeah, Quill mentions says, "You certainly do. I mentioned it earlier. The cemetery where Creeping Crud is buried. In fact, this is his grave. You know I love you, don't you? And you always kill the one you love." Ah, never gets tired of being the creepiest lines in the world.
It's not a good wedding vow.
Angela has an expression. "No, you can't. Don't kill me. It's not fair. It's not fair. If there's a God in heaven, there has to be justice." And she starts glowing like Stephanie in DP7.
Yeah, I was thinking almost like Scorcher.
There you go, too. Yeah. She has a glow around her, and Quill is looking around saying, "What are you doing? What are you doing to the ground? Stop it right now." There's a rumble, and a couple of arms pop out of the earth. Quill is taken aback. C-c-c-creeping crud. And we see this headless body rising out of the tomb. He shoots it. Blam. We turn the page to an amazing two-page spread.
Yeah.
Wow. Pages 24, 25. And Angela is obviously this is part of her paranormal power, but she's like making these hand gestures like she's a witch.
Yeah.
It's
Very like Scarlet Witch kind of stuff.
Yeah, if you ever read Tarot, Black Witch of the Black Rose, it's a lot of that sort of
Totally like that.
Jim Ballant, where are you when we need you? Yeah, did I miss some of no, yeah, so it's some of Tenzin's narration picks up at this point. And like I say, we got a two-page spread of Angela doing sort of arm gestures and glowing. Quill shooting his gun and running away, and he's like surrounded as like dozens of bodies are popping up out of the graves. And the Tenzin narration goes, "It's after midnight, and there's still no sign of Quill or my daughter. I failed her completely and utterly. The monsters, tired of hiding in the closet, came out for her, aided by a human rat. And I, yeah, there we go. I, who tried to bury my humanity in a grave of self-righteousness, was unable to protect her. Lord, if you can hear me, please, if the end comes for my baby, let it be swift." Back to sort of the here and now. Quill is running and he is saying stuff that we hadn't even noticed. The cat was dead, and the guard. I did kill him. She made him keep coming. You could have told me you were a paranormal too. He gets to his car and closes the door while there's more of these zombies headed towards him. Psychic assaults, that I can defend against. That's there was someone supposedly aiding Quill, who is not himself paranormal.
Right.
But this, come on, and he's trying to get his car started when behind him, Ralph the chauffeur, who he had killed in his first appearance. Can I drive you anywhere, sir?
It's also like perfect horror movie stuff, right? Like car, get you get in the car and that's kind of safe, but you're surrounded by zombies, the car won't start, something's in the back seat, like
There you go.
perfect.
We're back to Tenzin's narration as Ralph chokes the life out of Quill. When I envision my child in the clutches of Quill, I can't even think of it. I seem to feel death's icy grasp all around. The other zombies are breaking the windows and breaking their way into the car. But corpses, stick maggot-ridden and stinking, closing in on us all. And somewhere Quill's probably laughing as we dance like lifeless dolls on strings. Let him laugh, for the laughter will die in his throat. I'll see to it. And we sort of pan out from this vision to it's a reflection in the eye of someone who's watching it. And we see that that's Angela herself. She's kind of sitting there, kind of stunned expression. And Tenzin's continues. Wherever you are, Angela, I swear this is one promise I will keep. Final page is again a splash. Angela by herself in the graveyard. There's the Quill is dead, fallen out of the car. There's a pile of zombies on top of him. And Angela's saying to herself, Daddy, the monsters came out, but I made them all go away, all by myself. I'm a big girl now, so I'm gonna take a little nap. Night night. And that is it.
Yeah, so like presumably she powered down, and then like all the zombies are just back to dead. And the cat looks like it's lying there too, so
Yeah, so the cat was dead the whole time. That was
yeah.
that I didn't pick up on at all. Didn't see
No.
that one coming.
No. But yeah, I
Yeah.
think the first bit of her powers was when Creeping Crud got his head blown off, like he had one last crawl into the building so they could shut the
Oh.
door
You're right, you're
while
right.
he had no head. And we were figuring that, it's like a chicken with its head cut off and he's got these weird powers and that kind of stuff, but not the case.
Yeah, this was really strong work. It really tied up several things that we didn't even see as clues, I guess.
Yeah.
But put it all together in a really what to say, nail biter of a conclusion.
Yeah.
And yeah, I mean, you expect your main character to be the, maybe he shows up or maybe he's late and she's dead or something. You don't sort of see this sort of secondary character sort of pulling a rabbit out of her hat herself.
I knew she her powers were going to come into play, and then we got that from the solicit. But then even then, even having kind of predicted that, which is not so, it's not like a wild guess. It seemed like it would make sense because they were building up that she had a power, we just didn't know what it was. But even kind of knowing that's what was going to happen, this was still like a really good surprise. And I think looking back at the last two issues, and that's kind of the arc where Quill gets introduced, it's like they even kind of like took, pretty okay issues. Like I think we were okay with the last two, all the Quill stuff and like chasing and kidnapping Angela. Like it was fine. And they just kind of like leveled it up here for the end. And the art was better, really, like a lot of just, and Peter David always does like fun little things with the transitions. So like one character is talking about something, and then it kind of gets mirrored in the next panel as you transition to like, the other characters in the other side of town. And so he has his thing that he's always doing, but in this comic, it was, again, it felt like leveled up. Like I always kind of like it, but here he like used it masterfully. So it just worked.
Yeah, this was
Plus, who? No,
really.
nobody would have predicted that she'd control a horde of zombies to wipe the dude out. Like that was just epic. Once those hands came out of the ground, I was like, "Holy crap!"
That's yeah, that's not an expected power that I had on my list. What could they do? The That's why I said at the beginning, this reminds me in a lot of ways of a Swamp Thing story where that's like Swamp Thing's girlfriend Abby running away from a crazed killer and some, somehow manages to outwit him or something. Between the art style, the sort of slow build to it. Yeah, the book had felt, yeah, just like okay for a while, and this Quill was at least an interesting villain. I'm honestly amazed, like how before he seemed more, 10% crazy, 50%, I should say 90% professional hitman, but it's like 90% crazy in this one. This is
Yeah,
sort
I
of.
guess that kind of makes sense with his character, right? So like, he can keep it professional, like he's an experienced hitman, but then like the kidnapping angle kind of messed him up, right? Because now he's got this young girl that reminds him of the teenage love interest that kind of tweaked him out in the first place and kind of got him started on it. So like, he starts to come apart because he has to deal with Angela kind of thing. Like if he was just on a mission to the snipe justice or whatever he's got, he can stay more, cold-blooded and methodical and such.
Yeah. Well, good observation. We get no clue about the people who sent him to take down justice.
No.
So we still have some open-ended stuff going on here. But yeah, I don't know. Leveled up is a good word for it. It really, like, I'll be honest, I was expecting a very middle of the road conclusion to the storyline, like something where I'm like, okay, that's fine. But this was like, wow. I rarely, yeah, get that feeling from Justice. I always feel like I like the writing, but it's moving slower than it needs to in some ways. And so this really at least felt like, okay, well, that was worth a couple months of, sort of things building to get to this. I don't know. I will honestly give it an A. Quite enjoyed.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Right. It's one of those finally like something big that just kind of stands out. I'm like, all right, that was really good. Nukin.
Nukin indeed.
I wonder. Yeah, and Lee Weeks is pretty interesting. I had read this like junky Dark Horse like dollar mini comic thing that he drew, and like it was really well done. Whereas his work in the last couple issues is can be a little spotty. So I was wondering in my head if it's like, all right, well, if he's kind of rushed, you know, you get what you get kind of thing. If you give him lots of time, you know, he can do amazing work. But yeah, I'm also kind of curious as like, you know, the inker to save the day too, our Kim DeMolder might have just done a fantastic job.
I think he helped.
I think it's a he.
Right. Yeah, you're probably right. But let me see, what was their other work? They've done like the Defenders and some just sort of random stuff through the 80s. But like I said, the Swamp Thing, also I'm gonna say some Hellblazer. Stuff like that. Seems like it works really well with someone who does this like level of detail and hatching. Yeah, Defenders, Airboy for a while there. Nick Fury versus Shield was around this time. A lot of work and little Punisher. And then get into more DC work, Swamp Thing. Like I said, it works well for horror.
Yeah, or dark and stormy nights.
For whatever reason, has not been too active since the turn of the century. But yeah, if boy, people look like they're collecting original art. I gotta say, there's like the awesome pages per issue, and this quotient on this one were stunning.
Yeah, keep an eye out for that like page 24, 25 double spread zombie attack. Like,
I would
that's.
take that over those war covers that went on sale the other month. I will take
Yeah.
that anytime. Let's see, anything else? I did like also had a feel of like the Joss Whedon vibe that someone had pointed out about Peter David before, perhaps because that. Like the girl rescuing herself has kind of a Buffy the Vampire vibe to it.
Yeah, so I mean this is first, so
Yeah, it's a
maybe we should be calling it the Peter David vibe.
what you call it? If some people say that we criticize a little too much on YouTube of like this is all girl boss stuff that's been done to death and blah blah blah. And then in the mid 80s, this wasn't really been done to death at all. So yeah.
Yeah. And even if it is, like, you can still do it well, right? Like, nobody cares if it's done well. Like, if you have, like, the ridiculously overpowered female character who's, you know, rail thin but can kick people through walls, like, it's silly, but, like, if it's done well, if the movie's funny, if the writing's good, you know, those kind of things, it's fine. It's just like when you try and cram that, that's tend to where tends to be where it falls apart. So.
Yeah, if it just becomes another formula. Anyway,
Yeah.
let's see. We can take a look at the stuff in the back. I think we said before there's a ad for Captain America 350, Thor 400, and Avengers 300 all coming out, sort of in short order there.
Yeah. I have not really read any of those from this era. A little bit of Thor, but I think I forget where I stopped on Thor, but it was well before 400, I think.
Captain America looks like it's him versus the US agent. I kind of remember some of that stuff. So
Yeah, I
perhaps
think that
he's.
started right around the start of the new universe because when I was buying, for no particularly good reason, all the like new universe Marvel comics, like the what came out October 1986, there's like some pricey Captain Americas because it's like first John Walker or something. It's like, come
Yeah.
on, who cares? I know he was in the TV show, but
Got to get them before they're in a TV show, I guess. I
yeah,
don't
or well after when people stop caring, but.
know. We have a page of an ad for the Shadow Line. It is Dr. Zero. Lead us not into temptation.
This
And
looks
we have
super 90s.
credits. Yeah, Dennis Cohen, Cowan had, I don't know what he did. He's, I associate him a lot with his later Milestone work. This is, or maybe he was doing The Question and something else around this time. Yeah, I think he was just on Dr. Zero fairly briefly at the beginning of the series. I did look at those a while back, or a decent selection of the Shadow Line. They're interesting. They're already sort of taking lessons from the new universe, but not maybe the most entertaining way. So
Yeah. I just kind of, I don't know anything about the book, but when you see like the bodybuilder physique, the, and it's almost like the X-Men character Havoc had that kind of like pseudo mask, but with the hair coming out the top. Like there's a variety of those, but like that's that really kicked into gear in the 90s. And then like the shoulder pauldrons or whatever, like the things that stick out.
that's right. Yeah.
So Dr. Zero, if this is who that is a picture of, has got all of those things. No pouches
Sure.
yet, but he's looking super 90s.
Yeah, he's it's a good point. He he's on the cutting edge of several things there. We have a ad for subscriptions, and this had prompted me to notice that the prices had changed. The new
Yeah.
universe is now $1.50 for each issue. It's up to only 125 when the new format came in. So
Yeah, remember when price changes would only go up a quarter?
they, I'm honestly also amazed. They offer 14 issues of Justice, Cyforce, Star Brand, and DP7 for that you could subscribe to. We are at issue 27 right now, so we have 5 issues left.
Yeah, somebody probably signed up for that, and then at the end they started sending them like power pack or some crap.
Like I say, like there's connections with the NOM, maybe Strikeforce Moratori if you listen to some of the crazy
That's
people
definitely
online.
not a new universe title in any way, shape, or form.
Well, then you have Alpha Flight. That's Canadian. I
Yeah.
don't, that should be like in Canadian dollars or something, but
Right. Give it its own separate list way on the bottom in smaller text.
I'm actually surprised that if you look, there's the ones that are still 75 cents. Semper Fi is in there, the
Yeah.
like Marine Corps history thing. So
Yeah,
anyway.
it's kind of, I'm not really sure what the like what or how the breakdown works on that, right? You got 75-cent books, Daredevil, Fantastic Four, Semper Fi, Speedball, and then dollar books, X Factor, Transformers, Amazing Spider-Man.
Yeah, the I thought it would be like the one with the like the broadest distribution would be the cheapest, but the X-Men is already $1 versus 75 cents, which were in most of the other sort of core Marvel titles. So I don't know. Maybe they're just squeezing folks there a bit. The Marvel Comics Presents, the bi-weekly title has started. So we have a again the on sale this month, the covers for all the issues. The only one we haven't covered yet is the Star Brand at number 17, which we will hopefully be covering next week. There is a inside back cover is again the Light and Darkness War, which I looked up. It's available on Comixology. I just read like a brief description of it in an old Marvel Age that it is like, I'm not going to read a 4-page description of a book
Yeah,
that
it's
I'm not
like
going to.
crippled Vietnam veteran dream world The fight keeps going, kind of something, something.
Yeah, it's a, like a it yeah, it's like more of a fantasy version of it, of something I've seen in sci-fi books before, of like, yeah, you're kind of you're fighting in Vietnam and then you get shot down or something and you're set, you wake up and you're in another war in a fantasy world or the future or something. Yeah. And so
Yeah.
looks like it's available, as is the back page, this Punisher graphic novel, Assassin's Guild, which otherwise I have not investigated very much. But if
Yeah.
you want to check them out, let us know in the comments below how much you enjoy them.
Or don't.
You know, we'll just move on with our lives, I suppose.
All right, so that's it for this week's episode. Next time, the new universe checks in on the most random title, The Star Brand.
The Star Brand 17. The Star Brand is passed on. It's already been passed on a couple times. The result could mean paradise comes to Earth at last. Written and penciled by John Byrne, inked by Tom Palmer.
All right, here's my prediction for next issue is Star Brand Wilford Brimley fills the remaining pit with Quaker oatmeal. Because you got all
It's
that
the right
lava
thing to
on the
do.
bottom that can heat it up, but then the pit juice contaminates it, so it causes the diabetes.
I like
That's my
it.
prediction. We'll see. If you have a prediction of what Wilford Brimley is going to do with the pit, send us an email, newuniversepodcast@gmail.com, or write up a fanfic and we'll publish it on kickersinc.com. This what, mark my words, pit filled with oatmeal. This has been the voice of the new universe, and we'll see you back at the spinner rack.
It's your universe, idiot.
It was only supposed to make a buzzing noise.
The monsters must have put them there.
I get all the nuts.